sources to open this committee meeting today for May 11th, 2017. And we have two things we're going to be working on. Two and a half. There is, we have quite a crowd here, so there is overflow in the Galleria. So if you need to go and listen in, then that would be fine. But we're going to start off with House Bill 2318, a public hearing. Should I do a public hearing and work session?
It's just a public hearing.
Just a public hearing right now?
Just a public hearing and then we'll close that.
Got it. Public hearing for House Bill 2318 on the Parks and Department of Parks and Recreation fees.
Oh, sorry, it goes to work session.
Yeah, goes to work session. Yeah. Please. Oh, yes. Representative, good to hear you. Good to see you there.
Senator, committee, Dave Brock-Smith, State Representative, House District 1. House Bill 2318 just allows the Parks Department to have a little more leeway in their fee schedules around the around their park system. This came through, of course, our Ag and Natural Resources Committee, where it passed out. I believe that is in the best interest, especially in the coastal parks. There's a number of state parks in my jurisdiction that we give them this tool to be able to drive tourism in throughout the park system. So it's a good bill, and would appreciate and respectfully request your passage.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Thank you for being here.
My pleasure.
And I have on one. Do you need to say anything about this?
I was going to.
You need to say something about this. Would you please say something about this bill? Thank you.
Say something.
Chair Frederick, members of the subcommittee. The 2318 is a fee bill for the Department of Parks and State Department of Parks and Recreation. And what this bill does is fairly simple. It allows the agents. It allows the Parks Commission to establish a range of fees for park services, and then allows for the director of the Parks Department to adjust fees within that range up to four times a year. The range would still be subject to ratification process by the legislature, just like we do with other fees. But the actual changes of the fees within that range would not be subject. And I know that Lisa Sumption, the director of Parks, is here to give you just a real brief description of the bill and what it does. There is a fiscal impact to it. The agency is assuming at a maximum of about $800,000 in additional revenue in the 17-19 biennium. And there is a policy option package tied to that additional revenue in the agency budget bill, not tied to any personal services, but just to maintenance and expansion of repair and maintenance and capital projects.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Frederick, Co-Chair Witt. For the record, Lisa Assumption, Director at Oregon Parks and Recreation Department. I appreciate the opportunity to be in front of you today, and just I'll briefly, because I feel repetitive for several of you. You were on the other committee, so you probably could carry this conversation better than I. But we're nearly 100 years old, and we're really looking to the future to try to figure out how we can do things a little bit differently. We've been doing our rates exactly the same since 1952. Every site is the same price all across the state, and we know that for just a little bit more in some of our places that are very special and loved, that we might be able to drive more folks. For example, on the South Coast, we could get folks to go from a larger campground that's full and maybe use price and other amenities to drive folks to Humbug Mountain, who's 17% of capacity. So is there a way to disperse people and provide greater access and greater opportunity through price as one tool? So we appreciate the opportunity to have you consider this for our budget implications, and I'm happy to answer specific questions if you have them.
Specific questions? No? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Let's see if I can do this right. Okay, I'm going to close the public hearing on. We have testimony here. I'm sorry. See, I didn't do it right. Peggy, I apologize.
That's okay. Thank you, Co-Chair Frederick, Co-Chair Witt.
Along quickly here.
Yeah, I knew you'd miss me. The League of Women Voters has had a parks position for a long time, and this
need to introduce yourself.
Peggy Lynch, League of Women Voters of Oregon.
Thank you.
Sorry about that. And so we believe very strongly in the park system. This gives us an opportunity to have a conversation about the fact that the legislature tends to exempt certain people from paying fees, in this particular case, two very good ideas for the veterans and foster parents. And those are good things, but they cost money. And so this bill offers the opportunity to offset that cost. It's just like tax credits that we provide, tax credits for maybe good things, but that reduces the revenue that we have to spend on other things. So in this particular case, the Parks Department has provided an opportunity to give that offset, and I really encourage your support for this bill. Thank you very much. Be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions? No. Thank you very much. Okay, now I can do this right?
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2318 and open a work session on House Bill 2318. Is that me? Or is
that no, okay? Brad.
That's Brad.
Co-Chair Frederick, members of the subcommittee, the LFO recommendation on this bill is to move House Bill 2318 to the Full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation.
And Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 2318 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have now a proposal to move House Bill 2318 to the full committee. I guess we need to have a
discussion.
Do we have any discussion on that? No? Yes.
Mr. Chair, just a quick question. Does this have any general fund impact at all in terms of the revenue?
It does. It's going to raise revenue.
But it's not taking general fund from...
It's not taking general fund
right.
dollars.
Right. It's not taking general fund dollars. Okay. No, would you please, do we need to do a roll here?
Ask for any objections.
Any objections?
Yeah. You object?
No.
No.
I was going to carry it.
You
would you like to carry it?
Yeah. I'll do that. It is passed. Would you please carry it? That would be great.
You need to have
Senator,
a house carry on our
We will
floor.
Need a house carry, because it goes through the house first.
It goes to the floor.
Floor first. Okay. Representative Witt, thank you very much.
Absolutely.
Perfect.
Okay, and then we go. We'll close this hearing, the work session on House Bill 2318, and we are going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2269. And if you would give us a little explanation.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2269 was pre-session filed by the Department of Environmental Quality, and among other things, it has to do with raising fees in the air quality program.
Thank you. I don't know if we have presentation. Have a presentation? Yes.
Quick one.
Thank you. Yes. Swimmer, please.
Good afternoon, Chair Frederick, Co-Chair Witt, members of the committee. For the record, Richard Whitman, the Director of the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality. Thank you for the opportunity to present to you this afternoon on engrossed House Bill 2269. I'm going to do a quick run through the four main provisions of the bill. All right, there are four main sections to the bill, or four main parts to the bill, I should say. First of all, there is authorization for a additional fee on Title V permit holders to investigate in response to complaints about air quality. Those are sections 1 and 2 of the bill and policy option package 112. The fees would raise $418,000 for that purpose. The second part of this bill is a one-time assessment on existing air permit holders to complete the funding of the development of the Cleaner Air Oregon program. Those are in, it's in sections 2A, and it relates to policy option package 116. I know there's particular interest in this part of the bill, and I'm going to come back and talk about it in a little bit more detail in a moment after running through the main parts. The third part of the bill is an authorization for the state to receive monies from the settlement that has been entered into with Volkswagen over their diesel defeat devices on diesel vehicles manufactured by VW. That's approximately, I think the current figure is $72 or $73 million. We are looking at an initial installment of drawing of those funds of $10 million for this next biennium. And then the fourth part of the bill is authorization for civil penalties to enforce certain motor vehicle emission standard violations. This is something that is absent right now in our statutes. We actually do have authority to bring criminal penalties, but not civil penalties, and we're attempting to fill that gap. So those are the four major pieces of the bill. I want to now come back and talk a little bit more in detail about the one-time supplemental assessment for the completion of the program development for the Cleaner Air Oregon program. The need that is being that would be satisfied by this one-time assessment would be the additional science work that's necessary to evaluate emissions inventory data that's being obtained by the agency, and to also complete the preparation of the systems for implementation of the program, and finally to complete the rule writing and public engagement process for this program. We've done an analysis of how that fee actually works out to different classes of fee holders. That's presented in this table. I'm not going to go through the detail, but basically it's an assessment of 16% supplemental one-time assessment that would raise $1.1 million. The amounts for a particular permit holder range from very little, just a matter of as little as tens of dollars, up to more significant amounts for some of our larger Title V permit holders. And finally, I want to point out, I think you're all aware that this legislative body back in 2016 authorized funding for the Cleaner Air Oregon program. General fund dollars for the setup of this program, we're continuing to use those general fund dollars for the completion of this effort. The cost have frankly been higher than were projected for development of the program, in part coming out of some of the situations we've had around industrial air toxics over the past year, where we've had to do both rulemaking and monitoring that was above and beyond what was expected. There are a couple of next steps I want to point out here. First of all, there are some technical amendments that are still necessary on House Bill 2269 that have been identified by DEQ. There, for instance, is a in our fee statutes generally for the air program, there are caps for the very largest emitters that should be incorporated into this fee request as well. And then secondly, and this is important, we are asking for a one-time assessment here to complete the program development work. We are at a point in the program development where we are starting to have the basic outlines, the basic architecture of the program. But we are still analyzing emissions inventory data that we requested last fall and that has started to come into the agency. We want to complete that analysis in order to be able to communicate with you all what are the health risks that we're looking at and trying to address through this program. And also as a practical matter, what is it going to look like when it rolls out? How many companies are likely to be regulated in what way? We will know that beginning this fall, and we will be back to you in the 2018 session with a request for the fees that are necessary to operate this program on an ongoing basis, when we can right-size the program and have that discussion about what is the appropriate size of the program. So the discussion today is really just about the program development for the next 12 months or so. Okay. Let's see. I think that concludes the presentation. I want to say just a few words, if I may, about the Cleaner Air Oregon program while I'm here, and then I'd be happy to take any questions the committee might have. As I said, we are still at a fairly early stage of the program, but I want to articulate some principles that, as the director of DEQ, are important to me, that really set out some of the vision for what we want to see with the program. This is going to be a science-based program. It's going to be based on actual emissions inventory data that provides us a level of understanding about air emissions, health risk, that we have not had previously in the state of Oregon. It is also going to be a health-based program. We want, at the end of this effort, and once the program is implemented, to be able to assure Oregonians that we are focusing on the areas of highest health risk to neighborhoods and communities, and that where there is a significant risk to the public, that we are protecting them in an appropriate way. Another principle is that we are going to design a program that we are able to implement. We are not going to put together a program that is so complicated or so captures so much that we have gone beyond focusing on priorities and are trying to do too much. So that's part of the effort that is going on right now with a Rules Advisory Committee made up of a very broad cross-section of business, community, and environmental interest. And that's part of what we will be bringing back to you early next year. And then finally, just briefly to touch on why are we doing this at all? We had some of that discussion back in 2016, but I'll just reflect on that. We are continuing to see one-off situations where there are concerns about public environmental health coming from particular facilities, whether that's obviously Bullseye Glass in the city of Portland, or Ameritize in the Dalles, or Hollingsworth and Vos down in Corvallis, or as has been in the news recently, the NTEC facility in Lebanon. We want to avoid those situations in the future. We want to avoid those situations for the neighbors who live in the vicinity of those facilities, and we want to avoid those situations for the businesses that have to deal with those situations as well. We need to provide a predictable framework for all Oregonians so that they know that we're focusing on the highest priority areas, we're doing it in a responsible manner, and we are doing it in a way that is sustainable and that is not going to result in other health risks by driving businesses out of the state of Oregon and leading to rural impoverishment that has its own health risk with it. So that's what we're about in designing this program. I think you'll hear some testimony from folks today that there's still a lot of fear around this program. There's fear from neighbors who are fearful that they're not being protected. There is fear from businesses that are concerned about I'll just say witch hunts, inappropriate witch hunts that are singling out companies without solid information about what the health risks are. We need to avoid those situations, and this is how we're going to do it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Frederick. Thank you, Director Whitman. I really appreciate the presentation, and I think I really liked what you were talking about at the end, and I think it's good to remind everybody that this is a process. And as far as I understand, unfortunately, in Oregon, we were really behind in the work we should have been doing all along, and we needed to start this process in order to protect our citizens. And how we came to learn that our air quality was in question, it was unfortunate how that came to be, but I would think it's just be really irresponsible for us to continue with the processes that we've had to date. And so I think it's great that we've doing the Cleaner Air Oregon program, and with anything like this, there's going to be bumps along the way, but as long as we keep everybody at the table and there's going through the process and we develop reasonable rulemaking, then in the end, hopefully we'll have a program that achieves the goals that we set out to achieve. So I just wanted to say thank you for all your hard work on this and all the Cleaner Air Oregon people.
Thank you, Senator.
Senator Girard.
Yeah, I'm all for clean air, but I'm also for looking out for industries that are in total compliance with both federal and state laws, mm-hmm. in which you do a publicity stunt to get this bill passed. And I am talking about NTEC, where you went to court and the court told you that you needed to gag what you were saying about NTEC. And you haven't obliged to that. They were in total compliance with every federal and state law, and you were down there doing a publicity stunt.
Chair Frederick, Senator Girard, if I might. The NTEC situation illustrates a number of things. It illustrates the importance of honest and full communication between government and business. And I'll come back and touch on that in a minute. It also illustrates the gaps that we have in our current system. And the need for this program. And let me start there. I mentioned several facilities when I did my presentation. Those are all facilities that, so far as I know, so far as the agency knows, are in full compliance with their permits. However, we have gaps in our system where there are potentially serious health risks to families living in the immediate vicinity of facilities that are simply not covered by our regulatory system. The federal system is set up to focus on particular industries, and it's done from a national perspective, not looking at the industries we have here in Oregon. We have a state air toxics program, but its focus is primarily on area-wide effects of industrial air toxics emissions. Those are both good programs, but they are not capturing the potential localized effects of industrial air emissions. We need to be very careful in communicating with the public and with businesses, and to not create undue alarm about these situations. And so I hear what you're saying about NTEC. There were some mistakes made in communication around NTEC. We are not in a situation with NTEC where we believe, based on the information we currently have, that there is any imminent and substantial threat to public health. NTEC went to court to prevent DEQ and the Oregon Health Authority from communicating with the public, and that's their right to go to court. The court ultimately decided that the agencies do have both the authority and, I think, the responsibility to communicate with the public. I don't think even NTEC would necessarily question that. It's how we communicate, and we have to do that responsibly. I am fully committed to working with NTEC as we communicate going forward about what we know and what we don't know, and look forward to working with the company. The company has taken efforts to reduce its emissions of the particular pollutant we're concerned about, and I'm very thankful for that effort. So we have learned from the NTEC experience. I think there are lessons on a number of sides around NTEC, but first and foremost, it illustrates why we need a predictable framework to address these situations going forward.
I'd like, you know, this is all based, I think, on TCEs, and the thing is, there has been demonstrations that it causes cancer in mice. However, that has not been demonstrated in humans at all. So again, the way that was handled down there was an absolute disgrace for that company. It put them in jeopardy for multi-millions of dollars worth of lawsuits, and I personally think that is nothing short of a publicity stunt. I'm sorry, the timing stinks with this bill.
Thank you. Any other? Yes, Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Richard, as you know, this bill is not without controversy, and I've had a lot of people coming to me to share some of their concerns, I think reflected by room full of people behind you and the people that they represent. I've been made aware of a number of concerns that I want to test the accuracy of alternative points of view with you. One is that we, as a state, know where there are a lot of problematic areas that would potentially be contributing to air quality problems. And that those, in a matter of focusing, as you said, on high-risk areas is where we ought to focus our attention first in a triage-type fashion, and that we simply would be surpassing our capacity as a state to be able to deal with all of the problem areas that a comprehensive plan such as this might surface instantaneously, and that we would perhaps, as a cost-benefit trade-off, be better to focus on high areas of concern first, which in turn might diminish some of the costs on some of the employer community. And corollary to that would be that we should be targeting the bad actors first, and not the entire employer community that has emissions permits. So would you comment on those points of view?
Absolutely, Chair Frederick, Co-Chair Witt. I'd be happy to. A program like this is going to take resources to implement. It's going to take private resources as well as public resources. And one of the things I mean when I say this program is going to be science and health based, the intent is to focus on the areas of highest risk first. And we do not have the resources to do everything everywhere at once, nor is a science matter can I say that there are the level of significant risk, particularly short-term risk, that warrant anything like that effort. We're in the process of gathering information right now, but my expectation is that what it is going to tell us is that there are a fairly limited number of companies where there is, we have information that shows us there is a potential, I'm underlining that because we will not know, there is a potential health risk that is, and I'm not going to say significant even, but serious enough that it warrants going and doing and you'll appreciate this, some more modeling. And I'll get to the monitoring in a minute. It requires doing some inexpensive modeling first. And then if it continues to show an issue, then we do some more expensive, thorough modeling. And only if it shows a concern after that do we actually go to do monitoring. That's the stepped, measured approach that we are anticipating this program will take. And we are also anticipating that both as a science, as a health matter, as a practical matter, the number of facilities that we actually get into monitoring, or the number of facilities where we actually start as a regulatory matter requiring people to install expensive emissions control equipment, is going to be limited, and it's going to be limited to those very highest priority areas. There's no reason to believe that there is a health crisis in Oregon around industrial air toxics. We have some localized issues, likely, that we need to address that have been out there probably for some time. But we're going to do this in a rational, science-based way that addresses citizens' concerns, but does not drive business out of the state of Oregon.
Thank you.
Representative Power.
Yes, so I was on City Council when we first learned of the elevated contaminants. I was sitting in an early briefing with the research scientists that had gone out to do the Moss study very early on. They thought it was interesting. Since then, I think many of us, both locally and statewide, have felt like, to a certain extent, it caught many in the community flat-footed, because simply this scale of this program didn't exist at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, I feel like the agency and other stakeholders have been working very closely with the affected companies to find a balanced approach to monitor and provide assurances to the community and to the company stakeholders that steps are being taken to alleviate and mitigate these issues. And from my perspective and my experience, it's been in partnership with those companies. And I've very much appreciated you helping to walk regulated entities through that. However, I think we've still been in this reactive mode, and now we're trying to be more proactive in the future to avoid these circumstances from happening in the future,
mm-hmm.
Which, based on my experience over the last couple of years, is good for both business and for neighborhoods. Maybe you can talk a little bit about this will be a tool to collaborate with businesses, not just a weapon against them. Maybe you can talk a little bit about how this would shift your ability and elevate the agency's ability to work collaboratively and address these issues before they spill over into the Oregonian, for example.
Yeah, thank you. Chair Frederick, Representative Power, these situations where information is brought to us and it indicates a serious health risk, maybe even a situation, and often situations where the company is in full compliance with whatever permits it may or may not have, end up taking a lot of resources. I want to talk a little bit about roles of the agency in those circumstances. So, and I'll do it in the context of a couple of specific situations. We had the former battery manufacturing facility here in West Salem, where we recently learned through some sampling that was done in connection with some redevelopment work at that building that there were very high levels of lead dust within the facility that were an immediate health risk to the occupants of that building. That company voluntarily shut its doors to its tenants and has gone voluntarily through a complete cleanup of the building. And I think, if not this week, in the very near future, is beginning to reopen after getting a full bill of health from the health authority and from DEQ and from other agencies involved. That's a it's a success story of how we can work with a company, frankly, in a not totally regulatory mode, but one that's just about carrying out our responsibility to protect public health. Another example that I'll mention is from your area, which is Precision Cast Parts. And that was one of the companies that showed up as a potential area of concern in terms of certain pollutants. That company, as you know, undertook to pretty much immediately install additional emissions controls. We did monitoring, and the company is continuing to work with the community around monitoring to be able to identify for everybody what the emissions are and whether they're a health risk or not. Those are the sorts of relationships that we want to foster going forward with this program by having regular reporting from companies about what materials they're using and their estimated air emissions. We will be able to prioritize where we need to go work with a company to, again, do further analysis of what emissions are predicted to be coming from those facilities before we get into a full regulatory mode. I would predict that in many of those situations, there are relatively low-cost steps that the facilities can take relatively quickly to reduce emissions. NTEC's actually a great example of that sort of success. That's where we would like to get to, with that occurring on a science-based, prioritized way, in a proactive way and not a reactive way. When we're in the West Salem situation or Portland Precision Cast Parts or an NTEC, it is very resource-intensive for us, and it is very resource-intensive for the companies. It's not in either of our interests to be coming at these situations in that way.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I think I'm going to call up Representative Reschke. And I haven't met Representative Reschke, so good to have you here. Thank you.
Co-Chair Frederick, you may not know me, but I remember you from Channel 8. So.
Okay. You just aged yourself on that one, let me tell you.
I used to look a lot younger, they say.
So did I.
Co-Chair Frederick and Co-Chair Witt and honorable committee members, thank you for listening to my comments today. My name is E. Warner Reschke, State Representative, House District 56 from Klamath Falls and Lakeview, Oregon. I heard this bill as a member of the Energy and Environment Committee for the House and was a no vote then, and I'm still in opposition to this bill for a few following reasons. First, I come from a part of the state that still has not recovered from the Great Recession of 2008. Matter of fact, Business Oregon's Director Chris Harder testified this session before the House Committee on Economic Development and Trade that Klamath employment is still 9% below pre-recession levels and will not recover until estimated 2024, till we see prosperity as before the recession. Given those factors, it's extremely important that I do everything that I can to ensure that businesses that currently employ Klamath residents will stay and nothing happens to discourage future businesses from looking at Klamath as a place to build their manufacturing and distribution centers. Second, this bill worries me from a process standpoint. From my understanding, this bill stands up to FTEs first, and then fees will continue to develop the program moving forward. But I'm not exactly clear what the program exactly is. As a legislator, I need to be able to go back to my district and tell companies such as Collins Forest Products, Columbia Plywood, Geldwin Doors and Windows, and other manufacturers why they will be paying more and exactly what they'll be getting in return. What exactly is the benefit they will receive? What is the exact benefit that Klamath and Lake County residents will receive? Another way of stating this is I can foresee the exact costs involved with this program, but I cannot see the real benefits in the same way. I understand pockets of Portland may have air quality problems, but to me that gives little justification to create a one-size-fits-all statewide set of fees and mandates. Please do not mistake my opposition to HB 2269A as an endorsement for dirty, toxic air. Nothing could be further from the truth. But in my view, this bill is not ready, and all the program work should be completed, then presented, then voted on. Therefore, as currently written, I ask and encourage a no vote on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions?
Yes. Great speech.
Okay. Senator, yes. Senator.
Did you, were you going to say something else?
No. Okay. I'm short and precise.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Frederick. Thank you for coming and testifying. You know, we're all learning about each other's districts, which is what we do all the time here, yeah. Right? And it's great. Every day I learn something about someone else's district. And so in your area, is there, which companies have a Title V permit? Do you have any sense of that? Are you just learning that yourself?
I'm just learning that myself. But okay. I know, well, I do know that Collins Plywood, and I would assume Columbia Plywood also do.
Yeah. And so they are going through a permitting process now. And so I was kind of wondering about the what you were thinking about the impact would be with the Cleaner Air Oregon, if you had a sense of if you had any specific information of how you thought it would impact businesses, or if you're just speaking in a more global sense, I completely understand. Yeah. I was just curious. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Anyone else? Thank you, sir.
All right. Appreciate thank you.
I think I'm going to call up next Mary Brenner and Dana Jones. Please, go right ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Co-Chair Frederick and Co-Chair Witt. And my name for the record is Mary Pivoteau, and I'm the president of Neighbors for Clean Air. And I appreciate this opportunity to testify in support of HB 2269 and the fees specifically. I think we should remember why we are at this moment, that last year when the toxics crisis hit, that it really wasn't just an understanding of one neighborhood and the concerns and risks, but it was that when we looked into the program at that time to be able to assess risk and anybody who lives close to a facility, there really is nothing in the regulatory program to assure communities that risk and health is adequately protected. This bill and the modest and necessary fee increases it imposes represent a critical step in the process. I think the representative that just spoke is correct, but I think also Director Whitman actually articulated that this very much is an assessment, a one-time assessment, in order to continue the hard work to set up this program. And this work is really important for the successful implementation of the governor's mandate to protect, to establish health protective rules that DEQ and OHA must promulgate. So we must remember the why that we're doing this. For too long, communities across the state have been forced to bear the very real costs, health risks, and the cost imposed to them by the lack of an adequate air toxics regulation system. Cleaner Air Oregon will establish a regulatory framework. It will give certainty to communities and businesses so that health risks will be identified and, when necessary, reduced. So it's fair for the sources placing communities at risk of harm play a greater role in funding the effort necessary those harms have historically been asked to pay. So we strongly support, and I want to also speak to the fact that I'm very honored here to represent in my written testimony that Coalition for Communities of Color, Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility, Clean Air Corvallis, North Portland Air Quality Group, South Portland Air Quality Group, many of the people that have worked with us and are key partners in this process. So I'm very proud to be able to support them, as I also ask for your support and appreciate your consideration of this important program. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Frederick and co-chair Frederick and co-chair Witt and members of the committee. My name is Dana Jones. I've been working at Opal Environmental Justice Oregon around issues of air quality for the last year, but today I'm actually here on a much more unexpectedly personal note. So thank you for providing space to testify in support of this bill. Yesterday I was at a coffee shop. Excuse me. Working on preparing my written testimony on behalf of Opal, when I received a text from my partner to come home immediately, telling me that our two-year-old son, who has pneumonia, was not breathing well. I rushed home and looked at my son for a whole 5 seconds before scooping him up and hurrying to the ER. It turns out my son does not have pneumonia. He was misdiagnosed, but instead my two-year-old has reactive airway disease. This disease is very similar to asthma that affects children under six. My son was born with such strong lungs that he was a rare baby in the high altitude of Colorado who did not receive oxygen upon being born. He had to have 7 breathing treatments and a steroid just to breathe yesterday. Thank you. As I was pinning him down for his last one, his little body flailing, trying to get out of the mask, I thought to myself, would this have even happened if I did not move to Oregon to go to law school? I've been working in air advocacy for the last year and very involved in the Cleaner Air Oregon process and the diesel bill. And I am dumbfounded that advocating for clean air feels like such an uphill battle with so many of our lawmakers. We cannot choose whether or not we breathe air, and the folks living in this state are literally being poisoned by the air we breathe. Yes, in some areas worse than others. But all the numbers you read, Portland, Oregon is the number one in the nation for respiratory distress, according to the latest National Air Toxics Assessment, or the EPA states that we have an additional 460 deaths as a result of diesel emissions a year, levels of cadmium and arsenic in southeast Portland high enough to raise the cancer risk from 1 case in 1 million to 1 in 10,000. These are not just numbers. These are people with faces and lives, and you have a chance to protect them today by passing HB 2669. The people who are being most affected by loopholes in regulation are people of color and low income, in addition to sensitive populations like children and the elderly. I realize that many folks in industry do not want to pay for their pollution. I also realize that many folks in industry take a position that focuses on the positive steps that they have already taken to reduce pollution rather than accepting responsibility for the pollution that they are still emitting. But please realize that someone is always paying for the pollution. The question today is, who will that person be? The polluter or the people who are being poisoned by the pollution? An asthma visit to the hospital comes with an average cost of $5,911. That's the average. The costs can range from $400 to $28,000, depending on the length of the stay. The economic impact of asthma in the United States as a whole is estimated to be $5.8 billion. Asthma and respiratory illness and excess cancers are not confined to Portland, although Portland does have some of the worst air in the entire country. Rural communities, which are often communities of low income or color, are paying with their health, finances, and environment as well. Statewide, the prevalence of asthma is twice as high for economically disadvantaged adults, according to the Oregon Health Authority. This means that the folks who have the least financial means are paying not only with their health and their children's health, but also with their pocketbooks for industry's pollution, which is completely backwards and unacceptable. We know that clean air regulation works, and we know that it is also economically beneficial because we can look to the success of the Clean Air Act and the air regulatory mechanisms California has enacted for reference. The central estimate of monetized benefits from the Clean Air Act between 1970 and 1990 totaled $22 trillion, and the costs to comply were $0.5 trillion. As we sit before you today advocating for clean air for our communities, it is evident that industry does not have to shut down as the result of air regulation. Industry can coexist with regulation, and we can receive the financial benefit of a good partnership between the two. The legislators who enacted the Clean Air Act didn't just see that $22 trillion benefit and stop in 1990. They recognized that there was a continued need, and they enacted the 1990 amendments to the Clean Air Act. As a result, an estimated 280 infant deaths are avoided each year. Our Oregon lawmakers need to do the same thing today. We need you to recognize the need, the continued need that is there for breathable air in this state. The Clean Air Oregon process has been diligently tended to by the DEQ staff and the OHA, and I've been thankful to be a part of it. There are still elements, such as including background exposures like diesel, that need to be addressed, but it is nonetheless an absolutely essential step in the right direction. Please provide us with your support for this bill by passing it through today and showing us that our families' health and financial security is a priority for our lawmakers.
Can you hold on just a second? Mm-hmm. We have a number of people who want to speak as well.
Thank you.
If you're done, yes, Representative.
Thank you, Chair Ferber. I just wanted to thank her for coming and sharing your testimony. It's very difficult to come down after all of that, and I'm sorry that you went through that, and I hope that your child is okay.
Thank you.
And I'm really glad you brought up the diesel subject as well, another bill that we're grappling with, and very important that we pass that bill as well. So thank you.
Thank you. Sorry that took me so long.
That's all right. Thank you very much, and I apologize. And I want to apologize ahead of time because I do need to have folks come and be as quick as possible because we're supposed to be out of here by 2:30, and that gives us 32 minutes. So there you go. I would like to call up Mike Freese and Heath Curtis, please.
Co-Chair Frederick, Co-Chair Witt, for the record, Mike Freese. I'm here on behalf of Associated Oregon Industries and the Oregon Business Association. We represent approximately 1,700 members across the state who employ about 250,000 Oregonians. I've submitted written testimony that should be on OLIS, and with the time constraints, let me be brief. First, I want to make sure that we're clear that we support Volkswagen settlement distributions, and we do. We're working on that in Senate Bill 1008A, trying to find a path forward for that particular bill. We do think it's incredibly important to spend that money right and make sure that it's targeted in the areas most in need. We have an extraordinary opportunity to make a difference, and we want to make sure that that we're part of that conversation, and we'll continue to work on that on the Senate side. It is important to recognize the immense work that is also that has gone into this rulemaking. AOI and OBA both sit on the Rules Advisory Committee, and we appreciate the agency's efforts to work with various stakeholders to develop a rule, really with the intention of all of Oregon in mind. And we support many of the goals that were outlined by Director Whitman today. Predictable regulations are protective of public health and are predictable are incredibly important to our members. Unfortunately, we believe the proposed rule framework, the one that we are really having trouble with, fails to address many of our most significant concerns, including creating standards that will be not only difficult but quite possible, impossible to comply with in many instances. In addition, our members continue to express concerns that the agency has or will try to implement or enforce rules before the EQC adopts the cleaner air rules. I think we heard some of the back and forth earlier about some of those situations. And with these fees, that those efforts will continue to persist. And unless and until the agency is able to demonstrate that the proposed rule will not unreasonably burden both the agency, in which the business community and regulated community continue to support, does not unreasonably burden the agency, businesses, and communities, we cannot support the fee increase in House Bill 2269. With that, at this time, we would ask that the committee oppose any inclusion of the fees and continue to push the agency, businesses, and all stakeholders to continue to work towards resolution of this matter. Thank you.
Thank you. And where you said that you had submitted some written material?
Yes.
Who is it under? I don't see it on our whole list.
It should be under Mike Fries. I think my assistant sent it over earlier today.
Okay.
So, is that a question while we're looking for this, Chair Frederick?
Yes.
Real quick, I know we're in a time crunch here, just this, since they represent so many businesses. So you're opposed to the bill. Are you opposed to any fee, or are you opposed to this amount of the fee? Are you opposed to, can you just explain your opposition in more detail, please?
Yes. Co-Chair Frederick, Co-Chair Witt, Senator Taylor. We do think that the approach that the agency took on a one-time 16% fee increase seems to be appropriate in this circumstance where we don't know what the program looks like. There are two issues that really where my members are very, very concerned. One is the proposed framework and some of the elements in the framework are incredibly problematic, and there's significant fear that if those elements of the framework as proposed are written into a rule, that many manufacturers will have to close their doors. So that's one issue. The other is is an issue where there's some concern that the agency is already out implementing rules that have not yet been adopted, and that this fee increase would be, some of the revenue from the fee increase would be continuing to allow that to happen. So that's where the issue is. We do want to continue to work with stakeholders as well as the agency to see if we can find resolution of this so that this doesn't continue to be an issue this session.
But will you support a fee increase?
Under
not, what circumstances? This bill or not this bill in any way? I mean, are you supportive of a fee increase? Is AOI and OBA willing to support a fee increase to help fund the Cleaner Air Oregon so DEQ can do this work? Is it? It's, I understand you may not like the framework, or you may not like, I'm just wondering, are you willing to support a fee increase?
So co-chairs, Senator Taylor, we have traditionally supported fee increases as far back as I've been involved in it and before that. So that's, the fee increase is not necessarily the problem.
Okay.
But there are.
I understand, okay. Just so I understand. Yep.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Witt, oh, no. Did you have something to say? Yes,
I did. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mike, we had testimony preceding you that indicated there was reactive air disease. Obviously, that's an indicator of a problematic air shed and likely in a certain neighborhood. Would it not make sense to target that particular neighborhood for additional air quality monitoring?
Co-Chair Frederick, Co-Chair Witt, monitoring we continue to support. We think that that's an important tool in order to inform the agency and businesses in our air quality. So that is really important. I would also note that there are current regulations, air toxics regulations, in fact, that would help do some of that. So the challenge has been, frankly, is that the legislature has not been able to spend money to improve monitoring in those areas. That's not necessarily where we're at. So,
and if, go ahead. And if we were to monitor then known problematic areas, that would I would assume that would potentially be a pathway to additional enforcement of our state's air quality regulations?
Senator Frederick, Co-Chair Frederick, Co-Chair Witt, it depends, I suppose. I under the current framework, I think that would lead to additional regulations, certainly.
Thank you.
Representative Power.
Yeah, Mike, how concerned are you that you may have other members who may be unknowingly posing elevated health risks? And if you're not supportive of this fee, what are you doing to help work with them to make sure that they're not causing similar problems in their communities?
Co-chairs and Representative Power, I'm not sure I completely understand the question. Is the question whether they are unknowingly?
I think that's been part of the conversation, right? Some of these folks are in compliance with current permits, but the permits don't go far enough to capture some of these health effects. The purpose of Clean Air Oregon is to take a broader look at that and determine if some of these folks need to be doing additional measures to lower or address their emissions in different ways.
Yeah.
I mean, from the testimony I've heard today, it is my sense there may be other folks still out there, either bad actors or folks who don't know what they don't know. And so if you're not supportive of this fee to help broaden and stand up the program and address this information, are you at all concerned that you may have current members who may be subject to, you know, similar sort of situations as PCC and others in the future?
Co-chairs, Representative Power, we are very concerned, and one of the challenges that we faced starting before this last year, so over a year ago, two companies that were not members of ours have now created an issue for all of our members. And so this is, so of course I'm concerned that there are anybody out there, whether they're my members or not, that are unreasonably exposing anybody or any community to emissions level that are unsafe. We want to make sure that they've got, that we understand that, and that they've got a predictable path forward. What businesses have today is not predictable. And so that's why we continue to work with the agencies to make sure that we can set a path forward. But predictable in the sense that it puts people out of business is not something we can support.
Thank you very much. Please.
Co-Chair Frederick, Co-Chair Witt, members of the committee, my name is Heath Curtis. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Forest and Industries Council. OFIC represents Oregon's large timber landowners, and relevant to this conversation, the vast majority of Oregon's forest product manufacturers. OFIC members represent some of Oregon's most prominent rural employers. To begin with, I'd like to echo the testimony of Mr. Freeze. OFIC opposes the fees in House Bill 2269 unless and until the program is modified to reduce what we view as a dire threat to rural Oregon businesses. You've heard the Department of Environmental Quality say that it intends to create a reasonable program affecting a fairly limited number of companies and that it doesn't intend to drive businesses out of Oregon. However, those statements are difficult to reconcile with the written language in the rule framework the department published in March. The allowable risk thresholds in that framework are impossibly low, set at levels 3 to 10 times more conservative than similar air quality districts in California. The framework indicates that those operating above the allowable thresholds will be subject to risk reduction plans. Allowable risk and risk reduction, those are terms of art that in most jurisdictions amount to operational curtailment if there are not economically achievable control technologies sufficient to meet the regulatory thresholds. In this context, and at the thresholds proposed by DEQ, we strongly believe that impacts to rural Oregon employers would be dire. For this reason, OFIC's members were highly alarmed, and so were their employees. Literally thousands of timber employees at this point have written letters to the Department of Environmental Quality asking that they bear in mind the impacts they're proposing to rural Oregon businesses and to please reconsider the path they're on. You may have seen photos of the large stacks of letters mailed to the agencies. I'm not aware of this ever happening before with OFIC's members. It's a really big deal. In the end, some people believe that there is no acceptable level of risk, no matter how vanishingly small, and that in the context of reducing air emissions, no cost is too great, particularly if the price is sacrificing other people's jobs. However, in my experience, most Oregonians are not so extreme. Given the profound benefits, we endorse many activities that carry with them risks far exceeding anything contemplated here. Driving cars comes to mind. Good policy requires weighing costs against benefits, and air emissions are no exception. We agree with the agencies that Oregon can have clean air and a vibrant manufacturing sector. We disagree, however, that DEQ's proposal accomplishes that end. And to be frank, I actually take Director Whitman at his word that his intentions are true. I fear, however, that either he's grossly misinformed or that he's underestimating the impacts radically of what the regulatory program would result. So with that, given the state of the current draft rule framework, we really must insist that the legislature deny the fee request in House Bill 2269 until DEQ evidences in concrete terms that the rule package will be workable for Oregon businesses, including the many Oregon rural employers that OFIC represents. Thanks for taking our testimony.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Yes, Representative Wood.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Heath, can you in any manner quantify the fee costs to the employer community, or at least the folks that you represent?
The fee costs depend on the size of the facility. And what I'll tell you is that the fee costs are not overwhelmingly large. This isn't about the costs of the fees per se. This is about the profound risk to my members. We have limited tools to conduct this conversation in the legislature. And what we're asking you to do is to hold on to your discretion, right? To make sure that you're a part of the conversation with the Department of Environmental Quality as they're developing this program. Right now, they've given us some indications of what their program will look like, and I'm trying to tell you, it looks really bad from my perspective. And so what we're hoping you will do is decline to support funding this program until you get the assurances that you need that it will result in the outcomes that you want. Right now, I think that good intentions are little more than that, good intentions. We need to see some solid representations about how this program will work and why, in fact, it won't pose the risk to Oregon businesses that I believe it will.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm going to call up Angela Crawley Cook and Paige Spence, please.
Co-chairs, may I cede my testimony to James Ellsworth, also with OLCB?
Okay.
Thank you.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, Angela Crowley Cook, Oregon Environmental Council. We're here to strongly support House Bill 2269A. We believe it's critical for the Oregon DEQ to maintain a fee schedule that's sufficient to cover reasonable costs, including levels of staffing necessary to administer the new program, meet the industry needs, and protect the health of Oregonians. Right now, an increase of fees are necessary to cover all reasonable costs of the program. And with this issue in particular, if any of you heard the testimony in the House Energy and Environment Committee, it was really striking and sad how these air toxics have affected individual families and how it will continue to affect those families for decades to come. And so we are asking industry to pay more to make a better system for all of Oregonians. And to me, that seems fair. Polluters do need to do their part to make sure that we have a better system going into the future. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hello. For the record, I'm James Ellsworth at the OLCV, co-chairs Frederick and Witt, and members of the committee. I'm the budget specialist for the Oregon League of Conservation Voters. I'm also the organizer for Clackamas, Multnomah, and Marion counties. I'm also a cancer survivor. And every day, my lungs have to deal with air pollution. That is the effect of chemo that saved my life. They are damaged because of that. This bill makes good the work that Clean Air Oregon has put forward. This provides the funding that is needed, and it simply asks that polluters pay for their negative externalities. OLCV is strongly in favor of this. This will allow the state to be able to access the funds that are owed to the people of Oregon from Volkswagen, and invest those funds in decreasing our diesel emissions and improving our overall air quality. Diesel emissions are far more toxic than gasoline emissions, resulting in asthma, increased risk for heart attack, and can cause cancer. I can tell you personally that a plume of diesel exhaust from an old diesel engine will set my day back for hours having to find a full breath of air and having to make sure that I remain calm while not being able to breathe right. Air pollution is most impactful on vulnerable populations in our state, our children, our elderly, and those like me who have some pre-existing conditions. It is imperative that we prioritize clean air for the people of Oregon and ensure that the Department of Environmental Quality have the funds necessary to monitor air quality conditions and investigate sources of pollution. We must ensure that all Oregonians can be secure in the quality of the air that they can, so they can lead their lives without fear of struggling to breathe simply due to the inability to maintain this fee structure. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Yes, Representative Wood.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. James, we've had a number of witnesses so far today talk about diesel emissions. And I'm wondering if that is really should be the focus of our attention, and are we casting a broad net that it could potentially be exceedingly expensive, and if we could in fact target motor vehicle emissions, diesel emissions from motor vehicles, does that set us on a trajectory where we significantly impact the quality of our air, that perhaps we could find other cost containment measures that enables us to continue to increase air quality, but not perhaps impose costs that are problematic for a number of our employer community.
Co-chair Witt. I'm going to ask for a little help here from Angela, but also I grew up on a family ranch in Central Oregon. I grew up driving diesel engines and tractors and hay loaders, and I can understand that there are potential implications. That being said, I know from the many family relations and friends that I have in the agricultural community that this is something that I have people who are concerned with as well, and that when they are driving their tractors, they know that sometimes they come off the day's work and their breathing is labored, and that this isn't something that they're strictly opposed to.
Thank you.
And I'd also like to have Angela respond.
Co-chair Witt, thank you. Phoning in a friend here. So unfortunately, this is something where we have to look at both issues, air toxics from industrial sources and diesel. So as we saw with the bullseye glass situation, air toxics have a kind of a limited range around that facility. And the toxic chemicals that come out of those industrial facilities can be different from the toxic chemicals in diesel. Diesel is made up of 50 different toxic chemicals, so diesel is a huge problem that we really need to address. But we also have to deal with air toxics. So some of the things that came out of Bullseye and the other glass facilities are not found in diesel, but are serious health problems. I'm not going to list them off because I'm not a scientist, and I'll probably screw up the chemical name. But we do have to work on both, unfortunately.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, too. I appreciate that. I'm going to call up Elizabeth Howe and J.L. Wilson.
Co-Chair Frederick, Co-Chair Witt, members of the committee, my name is Elizabeth Howe. I'm here representing the city of Springfield. I don't know if it's on OLIS yet, but there, we do have written testimony that should be up by the end of the day today, staff tells me. So reference that, and I'll just summarize. The city of Springfield believes that Oregon can have both clean air and a healthy business environment with fair and reasonable air regulations. And to that end, we support the goal of Cleaner Air Oregon and many of our manufacturing facilities that are the core of the economy in the Springfield area have done a lot of work with environmental control technologies to do just that. However, we have serious concerns about particular provisions in Cleaner Air Oregon that the fees in 2269 are intended to fund. We believe they could have a serious impact on our economy, in our community, and in communities like ours. The proposed rules could negatively affect more than just manufacturers like our timber economy, but hospitals, and Springfield is home to two regional hospitals, as well as gas stations, dry cleaners, even emergency services operations, and 911 centers that have backup generators. So until the scope of the proposed rulemaking is clear, it's premature to be funding the program. And that's we urge you to take that into consideration. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, co-chairs and members. For the record, I'm J.L. Wilson, representing the Oregon Metals Industry Council, the Food Processors Association, and the Oregon State Chambers of Commerce. All three organizations are opposed to House Bill 2269 and the fee provisions. We don't believe the legislature at this point should affirm a regulatory effort that appears to be an overreach. And while I do take the director at his word that there's not an intention to cause economic disruption, it is incompatible with the components of the regulatory framework. And I'll get to the heart of it. Most notably, it's the allowable health risk levels that are set in the regulatory framework that really gets to the heart of the concern in the business community and why we don't feel we can comply with the framework as it currently stands. The 10 in a million threshold in the regulation is more stringent than anything in the country. California was held up as a model. This is more stringent by a factor of 3 to 10, anything currently set in California law. And it's recognized by such, including California localities, who reached the conclusion that a 10 in a million threshold would cause major economic, public safety, and health backlash. And the health consequences and the public safety consequences come because you can't operate a backup generator for a hospital or a prison or a 911 call center or everything else without violating the 10 in a million threshold. Our innovative manufacturers that we depend on for our economic vitality, all the way from metals to food processing to CLT products, who already employ maximum available control technology, will be out of compliance. And then what happens? If there's no available controls to meet the standard, what happens? And I think that that's a question that deserves an answer, especially before the legislature opts to fund continuing rulemaking efforts. And finally, I guess I'll just say I do, again, take the director at his word that there is not an intent to cause economic disruption, but it is incompatible with the 10 in a million threshold that is in the regulatory framework right now. The two cannot coexist without significant disruption to our economy and subsequent disruptions to public safety and health. So thank you. Would be happy to answer questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions?
I just wanted to clarify one thing, Chair Frederick. Senator. Okay, thank you. So just from both of you, the fees are always discussed. In natural resources, everyone knows that the 14 agencies largely work off of fees, since very little money comes from the general fund. And so that's a conversation that happens often in here. So I'm trying to parse, so are both of you can just kind of answer real quickly, are you okay with the need for fees to be there in order for the Cleaner Air Oregon program, the Cleaner Air Oregon program, whatever we're calling it, to go forward and to be able to do the program? Do you support the concept of the program and you want to, or, and then if you could respond to just real quickly, if there are very specific changes you want to see and you feel you're justified in requesting those changes. I'm trying to separate those two issues of what the opposition is for the bill, please.
Thank you, co-chairs and Senator Taylor. Fees to conduct the everyday normal operational components of the agency, that's fine. The Section 2A fees in the bill unequivocally oppose to continue on with the Cleaner Air Oregon rulemaking effort. And it is because I illustrated, if that 10 in a million threshold is in the regulatory framework, and that's the operating assumption going forward, it will close down critical Oregon companies, and there is no way we could support that. And so until there's a demonstration that that number is flexible or tethered to some sort of economic reality, and that we're going in that direction, and that the rulemaking starts to gel around a number that is more prominent in California, maybe 100 in a million standard, there is absolutely no way our clients could support fees to carry on with that work.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Did you want to say something as well?
Mr. Chair, since Senator Taylor looked right at me, I think I'll respond as well. Businesses in the Springfield community, I don't think the fee itself is what is generating a great deal of concern. It's the program that the fee is funding, and that this is really our only leverage point in coming to the legislature to say, can you help us get DEQ to respond to our very real concerns about the detrimental impact on our economy from these particular provisions, and this allowable risk level is the one we've heard the most about in Springfield.
Thank you for clarifying.
Thank you very much. Representative Witt, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jail, if we had a program that targeted known problem areas, such as neighborhoods that have been described that are poisoning people now, and we targeted those for additional enforcement, would that, do you see that as an effort at cost containment that industry might be able to support?
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I'm going to call up two more people, but then we are going to have to break. And did you want to say something as well?
No, I'm good.
Okay.
Trying to be quiet now.
You're trying to be quiet. Okay. I'm going to call up Penny Miner. Is it Miners? And is it Greg Thielen from EPAC?
Yeah, I'm Penny Miners with North Portland Air Quality, and I will be seeing you at coffee on Saturday.
Great.
And I would like to turn my time over to Paul Lewis instead.
Oh, is Paul Lewis on here as well? Oh, yes, he is. All right. Paul Lewis is fine.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll just start here in interest of time.
Thank you.
For the record, my name is Greg Thielen, co-chairs Frederick, Frederick and Witt, and members of the committee. I'm here today in support of House Bill 2269A. I'm a native Oregonian and not being paid to be here. I'm a concerned citizen who is asking you to do the right thing by supporting the governor and the DEQ in their efforts to make our air healthier to breathe. We need cleaner air, Oregon, and the science and health-based standards and regulations it's now formulating. And we need you to ask polluters in Oregon to pay for it, not small businesses, not the mom and pops. As I understand it, this bill is written so that only some of the largest polluters will fund this regulatory process, as they should. It is well documented that the costs paid by industry in cleaning up industrial processes to reduce emissions are far outweighed by the dollar benefits to the state through reduced health care costs and worker productivity, not to mention increased lifespan and quality of life. Unfortunately, these are factors that are not considered by industries if they're focused on short-term profits. I have closely followed the CAO rulemaking process from the very beginning and have seen paid lobbyists and industry representatives resist health-based standards and regulations all along the way. This resistance is not new. It has historically been a pattern since the Industrial Revolution. It nearly always takes government intervention for the public good to be recognized and for the public good to be recognized and taken care of. This is a time when you, our elective representatives, are being asked by the governor and health and science professionals to act for the public good, not for the financial interests of companies who make a profit while polluting our air. I'm asking you to please do the right thing for your fellow citizens. Please support HB 2269A. I'd also like to add that I have not, that the risk-based standards that have been talked about recently in these by other people have not been decided upon, and I believe that we need to trust the DEQ and the CAO, the scientists and health professionals, to determine these numbers.
Yes, please.
Co-chairs Frederick and co-chair Witt, my name is Paul Lewis. I'm a practicing pediatrician. I've been here doing that in Oregon since 1996. I also serve as the Multnomah County and Tri-County Health Officer for the Portland metro area, and I'm also a member of the OHADEQ Cleaner Air Oregon Advisory Committee. I'm also the parent of three teenagers that were born and raised in Oregon. And I feel like I've been hearing a lot of passion in the last few minutes about protection of industry. I'm here to talk about the protection of children. We have a quarter of our state is children. They need to be protected. I and the Multnomah County leadership strongly urge passage of the funding for this bill to complete the work that has just been started by the Cleaner Air Oregon Rules Committee under existing statutory authority. Just 15 months ago, I, other parents, and professional colleagues were shocked to learn that those of us living in Southeast Portland for 40 years had been living under a tox of legally admitted heavy metals. And this isn't stuff you've never heard of. Lead, arsenic, cadmium, and they even experimented with burning uranium in an unfiltered stack, okay? So that was just happening to us, and it's truly unacceptable health risk. And I'm going to return to children again. Children have 80 years, we hope, in front of them. And cancer, we now know, is the combination sometimes of things you're born with, but mostly of accumulated exposures over the years and decades that you're born. So this really is most important for children and also for vulnerable communities that tend to live, work, and play in the most polluted areas. When I later found out that the emissions could easily be controlled in Southeast Oregon under existing DEQ authority, I couldn't then and still can't believe why it wasn't done sooner. Within a few short months, the emissions had dropped 99%. It was easily controlled with off-the-shelf, relatively inexpensive technology. The Cleaner Air Oregon process began with a technical advisory committee. It's continuing with a very evenly balanced group of industry advocates and public health advocates, and I urge you to pass this bill to allow the continuation and completion of that work. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. We are at 2:31 right now, and we are supposed to be out of here right now, but I wanted to thank everyone who has been here and testified. We have a list of, I think it's about 20 different letters from people, including several of the folks who are signed up right now. I think we'll ask that if it's okay, I hope that it will be okay because we're going to have to close out the meeting. But I really appreciate and recognize we're not voting today. This is we are taking public testimony to public information. So this is very helpful for everyone. Please send if something else has come up in as you've listened to the testimony already. Please send in more written testimony that will help a great deal. But as it is, I'm going to have to close out the subcommittee meeting. Close out the public hearing, House Bill 2269, and then close the subcommittee meeting on natural resources. Thank you.
Thank you.
Co-chair Frederick.
Thank you.
Co-chair Frederick.
Thank you.